we mean that God created out of nothing? How are we to make sense of this profound theological view? This is Reasonable Faith, Conversations with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and I want to remind you as we begin this conversation that there are many resources like this podcast available at reasonablefaith.org. Dr. Craig, Christianity teaches creation ex nihilo. What does that mean?
Creation out of nothing. It means that God didn't use any material stuff in creating the world, but that he created the stuff itself.
Much like the scientist who went before God and said, God, we can do anything that you can. And God said, show me. So, well, we can make a life. God says, show me. So, well, first we get a bunch of dirt. And God says, wait a minute, get your own dirt.
You know, right.
It really is that kind of thing. So there was no material for God to use to create. He created the material itself.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's the doctrine.
Is there a possibility that God could have created out of himself, whatever his essence is?
Well, there is a philosophy that holds that. It's called Neoplatonism. This arose in the first few centuries after Christ and is a kind of offshoot of Plato's philosophy. And what people like Plotinus and Proclus, who were famous Neoplatonists, believed is that God is a sort of undifferentiated unity. Sometimes they called it the One. It's very similar to Eastern pantheistic views of reality, where the absolute is undifferentiated. Nothing can be said about it because there are no distinctions, no predications about it. In fact, you can't even say it exists. But the One is this absolute, undifferentiated unity, which is the source of all reality. And then out of the One, there emanates a kind of stair-step progression of beings. The mind comes out of the One, and then out of the mind emanates the world in its various facets, such as the stars and the moon, and then finally the terrestrial globe and so forth. So on this Neoplatonism, everything in a sense emanates out of the being of God or the absolute or the One. And that would be probably an example of the sort of thing that you've described, although it wouldn't be creation because this isn't done by the free will of the One. The One is not a person. This would be a just sort of a necessary outflowing, like the rays of the sun from the sun, rather than a volitional act of creating.
So we can pretty much rule out the first one, God creating out of pre-existing material because he made the material itself. From nothing, out of nothing. What's wrong with this God creating from himself or out of himself that you just described?
Well, doctrinally speaking, it would blur the distinction between creator and creature. On the Christian view, everything other than God is a created thing that depends upon God for its existence and is the freely willed production of God. God could have freely willed to refrain from creation and just remained alone. And everything that does exist exists because he has brought it into being. And therefore, emanationism would be unacceptable from a Christian point of view. Also, I think one would have to say it's hard to make sense of emanationism, too, because it's very hard to understand how a concrete material realm could emanate out of an absolutely undifferentiated unity that has no material, no matter,
no parts
or anything. Yeah. Exactly. It really doesn't seem to make sense. You kind of run into Plato's so-called third man argument in that between the One and any differentiated entity, you've always got some other entity in between that it's hard to see how you could ever have something that would immediately emanate out of the One, because immediately you would have differentiation arise. And where does that come from if the One is undifferentiated? And where would material and space and time come from if the One is beyond all those distinctions? So I don't think it really makes sense even to speak of this, much less think that it would be in accord with the biblical view.
So creation out of nothing, I hear a lot of people seem to think that that means that God took a handful of nothing and made something out of it.
Right, and that would be a mistake. When we say creation out of nothing, we don't mean that nothingness is a sort of something out of which God made the world. Rather, we could express it more clearly by using a negative. God did not create out of anything. He created, but he did not create out of anything. That's what we mean when we say he created out of nothing. We don't mean that nothing is something. We mean not anything.
And so there was nothing, and then there was something. God brought about something where otherwise there was nothing. Or am I making a mistake by saying
well,
where?
Almost. Yes, exactly. And using the word then as well.
Yeah.
There was nothing, and then there was something. It would just be better to say that there was not anything prior to the beginning of the universe or prior to the moment of creation. There was not anything.
Then how did God do that?
Well, of course, I don't think anyone knows. I mean, it's sort of like asking, how can God be omnipotent? God simply has the power to do everything that's logically possible, and there's no logical incoherence in creating something without a material cause. We can give some analogies to this. For example, in physics, you have what appear to be analogies of creation out of nothing. For example, in the expansion of the universe, as the universe grows, space seems to come into being out of nothing because there's more space now than there used to be when the universe was denser. So that in that sense, space, if you think of it as something, is coming into being out of nothing. Or even energy, and for example, virtual particles that come out of the vacuum. The vacuum has just as much energy afterwards as it did before the virtual particles appeared. So it hasn't been depleted in any way by the appearance of these particles. And in that sense, it seems that they originate without any material cause. They've been caused by the vacuum, but there doesn't seem to be any material cause. And in human productions, many people think that things like Beethoven's Fifth Symphony or Tolstoy's novel Anna Karenina exist, and they're not identical to particular marks on paper or particular published books. These exist as sort of abstract entities, and a copy, a physical copy of Anna Karenina or a score from Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is just an instance of that. It's not the thing itself. Now, where did these come from? Well, most people would say they were created by Tolstoy and Beethoven. They created these things. And so some people would say these would be examples of things that exist that have been created out of nothing. And that example is, I think, especially provocative because in this case you have the creation of something by sheer thought, by a mind. And God is a mind. So maybe as an infinite mind, God has somehow thought the universe into being. Maybe by thought he produces and creates a physical universe just as we, by thought, can create a symphony or a novel.
One of the differences would be is that there may be various outside influences that might come into play in the creation of that symphony. But with God, there wouldn't be any external influences influencing him one way or the other.
That's right. God would be very, very original in his artistic creations, whereas obviously Beethoven or Tolstoy have a whole range of societal influences upon them.
I still think it's a good analogy.
Play. Oh, yeah, it doesn't affect that they created it out of nothing.
Yeah.
But it's just to say that, as you say, their creative powers were shaped by past influences, whereas God is just totally original.
String theory has some people thinking. I've tried to think, well, maybe God created those little strings, those little vibrating strings of energy that make up everything. But then I thought, well, you've got to have space in order to vibrate in. And then those little strings are, even if they're energy, they're of a physical nature,
yes,
physical material nature. So God didn't make everything out of strings, even if they are the smallest component. You still have to account for them.
Yes. You know? Yeah, that's right. They would just be an alternative way of thinking of the fundamental building blocks of matter. And one would want to say that God has brought these fundamental building blocks, whatever they are, into being without any sort of further cause beyond them. He just He just produced them into being.
It appears you're saying, Bill, that there are only so many options, and we can get to creation ex nihilo, by process of elimination.
Well, that's the burden of the Kalam cosmological argument, actually. Your alternatives are that either matter is eternal and uncaused, or that matter is temporally finite and uncaused, or that matter is temporally finite and caused. And I think that of the three options, the last one is the most plausible, that matter and energy are temporally finite and that they are caused by a transcendent creator who brought them into being.
Just because we don't know how God did something doesn't mean that we don't know that he did it.
Of course, that ought to be obvious to us when we're dealing with an omnipotent being. Why in the world would we expect to be able to answer how questions? It will be sufficient, at least for the apologist's purposes, to show that there's no logical incoherence involved in this idea, that there's no metaphysical impossibility involved in the idea.
I heard an atheist philosopher once say, "You don't need God to account for the beginning of the universe. It could have just come from some uncaused matter, some metaphysical material."
Yeah.
Well, he's getting toward God at that point.
Yeah, you have to be really careful. You're just describing God using another label.
A metaphysical rose by any other matter. Name would smell as sweet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all matter and energy came into being in the Big Bang, if the standard model is correct. And so it doesn't make sense to talk about metaphysical matter unless you're talking about an immaterial being that transcends space and time and brought it into existence. And then that's exactly a God concept.
Are there any others that we've left out? Creation out of pre-existing material, creation out of God, the stuff of him, or creation out of nothing?
Or the other one would be that things just spontaneously pop into being with no cause.
The atheist has to pretty much assume that, especially on Big Bang, then, that everything just came about uncaused, out of nothing, from nothing, and for nothing.
Yeah, unless you're going to try to have an eternal universe, it seems to me that those are the atheistic alternatives, either eternal and uncaused, or temporally finite and uncaused. And I'm persuaded that neither one of those works, and therefore we should say temporally finite but caused.
The Big Bang cosmology, Big Bang theory, has been around for a while, and it appears that some cosmologists are trying to come up with alternate theories of the Big Bang.
That's nothing new. That's been happening since the 1930s, really, trying to craft alternative models that would avoid the beginning predicted by the standard model. But in a sense, the history of 20th century cosmology is a history of one failed attempt after another to avert the absolute beginning predicted in the standard model. Lay people often think cosmology is a science or a field of science in constant flux where there are no lasting or permanent results, one theory being overturned after another. But that is a misimpression that arises from the turnover and failure of these alternative theories to attempt to avoid the beginning predicted by the standard model. The standard model has, in fact, endured through 80 years or more of incredible ferment and advance, both in observational astronomy and in very creative theoretical physics, and is the best model that we still have for the origin of the universe. All theories which are alternatives to the standard model, which are still viable alternatives, also involve an absolute beginning of the universe at some point in the past. It is those models which attempt to have an eternal past that again and again are shown either to be untenable or to imply the very finitude of the past that they sought to avoid.
Why do cosmologists want to avoid that ultimate beginning?
Well, that's a very good question. I think one can show that for some of them at least, there were definitely metaphysical motivations for this. Dennis Sciama, Fred Hoyle, certain other astronomers wanted to avoid a beginning because it smacked of creation out of nothing. It looked too much like the Genesis account of creation. With respect to the Standard Model, I think, though, there's a good scientific reason for wanting to avoid the singular beginning. Namely, that's a point at which the theories all break down. And so it would be very nice to have a model in which the universe has a beginning, but it's not a singularity. And that's what Jim Hartle and Stephen Hawking have proposed. In the Hartle-Hawking model, you have a beginning to the universe. It is not infinite in the past. It's finite, comes into being, but it doesn't do so at a singularity, a point of infinite density, pressure, temperature, space-time curvature, at which all the laws of physics break down. And that would be one of the alternatives to the Standard Model that's still viable today, and, as I say, also involves the prediction of an absolute beginning.
Models like multiverses and brain theory and things like that tend to try to get this eternal universe in the past, that we're just one of many universes that has been banging from all eternity?
Well, that was the attempt that was made. Andrei Linde, who's a Russian cosmologist and a very fertile inflationary theorist, tried to extend his inflationary model into the infinite past so that the universe would have no beginning. But this was subverted by the Bohr-Guth-Vilenkin theorem, which showed that inflationary models cannot have an infinite past. Significant that Alan Guth was involved in that because he is recognized as the father of inflationary cosmology. And they were able to show that these inflationary models had to have an absolute beginning. Moreover, they were able to extend their theorem to show that it also applies to these string cosmologies and higher dimensional brain cosmologies that have been proposed by people like Paul Steinhardt at Princeton and Neil Turok at Cambridge University. These also cannot, in fact, be extended into the infinite past, so that these have also been shown to involve an absolute beginning to the universe, just like the Standard Model.
So Dr. Guth no longer holds to the bubble universe that he tried to posit?
Well, they still hold to a universe that may be inflating toward the future in terms of producing many bubbles, a multiverse of many bubble universes within the big mother universe. But the point is that the theorem that Guth developed with Bohr and Vilenkin also applies to the multiverse. The multiverse itself must have a beginning. That mother universe that contains all these bubbles cannot be extended infinitely into the past. And I found on the reasonablefaith.org website in the forums that many people don't understand this. They think that somehow the multiverse will avoid an absolute beginning because our universe is just one bubble within the womb of this wider mother universe. Well, in fact, that's incorrect because the Bohr-Guth-Vilenkin theorem applies not just to our universe, it applies to the multiverse, so that it too is finite in the past. So, as I say, Vilenkin himself has said that cosmologists can no longer avoid the problem of a cosmic beginning. They've got to face the problem of how the universe came into being.
Dr. Craig, as we conclude, let's make a practical application. A lot of people tend to want to put God kind of on the blackboard, leave him up there, and not commit to him, and just wait and see what the latest scientific advances are. The problem with that, it seems, is that you could wait forever, or you could wait till the end of your life. That's one of my thoughts.
I think that's absolutely right. You can always put off believing in the hopes that some new theory will be discovered which will overturn the present theories. And I find this really very hypocritical, shall I say. It seems that whenever science contradicts religion, that people jump on the bandwagon of science and proclaim another victory in the warfare between science and religion. But the minute that science begins confirming a religious conclusion, you find people jumping off the bandwagon and all these grave intonations about how uncertain and tentative science is and that it has no final conclusions and so forth. Well, that's just a double standard. If you think, for example, that evolutionary biological theory has disproved the Bible or theism, then why do you accept that theory as not being tentative and possibly going to be overthrown, but you deny the absolute beginning of the universe, which is predicted by astrophysical cosmology.
Our question of the day, Dr. Craig. Dear Dr. Craig, why doesn't God still do big miracles like parting the Red Sea?
I think these stupendous miracles were given at special junctures in salvation history to dramatically reveal God's saving acts at that particular point in history. When you look at the miracles in the Bible, you find that they tend to cluster around the Exodus in the Old Testament. Think of the 10 plagues upon Egypt and the parting of the Red Sea, the pillar of smoke by day and fire by night and so forth, the manna from heaven. And then in the New Testament, they cluster around the ministry of Jesus of Nazareth as he was born of a virgin, healed various people, exorcised demons, and then rose from the dead and ascended into heaven. These stupendous miracles of God were given at these special junctures of Revelation history to indicate God's mighty acts of deliverance in bringing his people out of bondage in the Old Testament and then in bringing the Savior of the world into history in the person of Christ. And therefore, these are unique, and these kinds of miracles are not repeated today.
Certainly, if God wanted to part some more seas, he could do it.
Sure. It's not that God lacks the ability to do that, but it's simply that in the course of salvation history, his plan for humanity, these sorts of acts are not necessary at this juncture in history.
For more resources like these from Dr. William Lane Craig, go to reasonablefaith.org. That's reasonablefaith.org.